I'm Mike Asnald, and welcome to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge's AC23 Plus Artist Legacy Series podcast. This is a series where we talk to artists who are doing amazing things in the areas of the arts, including performance, education, production, as well as arts advocacy. We record this series in the Virginia and John Nolan Black Box Studio, as well as in the Jan and Bill Grimes Recording Studio here at the Cary Siraj Community Arts Center. Be sure to visit artsbr.org for more information on all the great things we are doing here at the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. Hope you enjoy the podcast series, and thanks for tuning in.
Bravo, Patrick.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
I'd like to welcome all of our AC23 Plus viewers and listeners to another session. And today I have a wonderful friend, known him for a good while now.
Good while.
Mr. Patrick Bordelon. Patrick, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Thanks for playing like you do, because you sound amazing.
Thank you so much.
For our listeners and viewers, that was an original tune by Patrick, which was called Waltz. Is it Waltz for Baton Rouge or Waltz Baton Rouge?
I think it's just Waltz Baton Rouge. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'll take out that four. Yeah.
Was that inspired by anything?
I started a group called the Hot Club of Baton Rouge, going on 14 years ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
There's lots of meccas around the world that have hot clubs. There's a hot club of Moscow, hot club of D.C., hot club of San Francisco, hot club of Cowtown. That's the one in Austin. We'll play on it. So I figured Baton Rouge could use a, there's a hot club in New Orleans, of course, and they do a wonderful job. And I figured Baton Rouge could use a hot club as well. It's basically an homage to the wonderful two-finger guitar player Django Reinhardt,
of course,
who invented the or brought the gypsy style to the masses after hearing Louis Armstrong out of America, and you know, wanted to share it with the world. So even though he only had two fingers, became one of the greatest guitar players.
You would never know it, I guess, by listening to it, or would you? Like, is there going into the weeds of guitar technique already?
But
is there something about the sound he gets because he only plays with two fingers? I'm
curious. What he devised was a very horizontal way of playing. So most guitars, you know, would use a very vertical way of playing.
Right.
But because he only had two, his horizontal way used those two fingers like...
So the glissandos are kind of
built into that
technique.
Lots of glissandos and a lot of right hand. Because you can make those kind of chord clusters. But the idea of making every note important and putting something on every note. And that's kind of where Jeff Beck got it from. That's where Eddie Van Halen got it from. They all kind of tout Django as one of their main inspirations.
Wow.
Because you have to do so much with each note.
Yeah. Wow. You sparked another idea or a question, because this is this AC23 thing is an artist legacy series thing, and I'm curious, like when you said Hot Club of Baton Rouge, like legacy wise, is this the first Hot Club of Baton Rouge? Like, have you done the research?
And yes, I think so. No, yeah, it's a copyrighted name, and you know, it's technically an LLC, so we're the Hot Club of Baton Rouge. Yeah,
yeah.
I haven't found another one.
Yeah,
and yeah, so.
Awesome.
Yeah, we got that.
Well,
thing.
Thanks for that. I mean,
well, and
know.
And to bring the legacy idea, you know, we all play with so many different groups and so many different setups and things. And I imagine when I'm 80 or 90, you know, what music still makes sense.
Right.
And the gypsy thing still makes sense when you're 90. So
yeah.
Maybe that's a.
Well, that's one thing. It's a lot of the repertoire is the same actually, but when I think about, you know, traditional New Orleans jazz. And I, you know, just have gotten to know so many of the musicians and played with them over the years in New Orleans. Yeah. And that music, it stood the test of time.
It's
timeless.
It's
over 100 years old,
and it's still
very vibrant. And the tunes are the tunes.
Tunes. And people can feel it without having to do homework. You know, I think sometimes in jazz people think they're not, you know, into it enough to really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And both with New Orleans as well as gypsy jazz, they get it immediately. Like they don't have to think.
Right.
They just get the feeling.
Yeah, I've heard some people, I've been guilty of sometimes referring to the kind of jazz you're talking about is almost like calculus jazz,
calculus jazz.
It's, you know, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, being cerebrally stimulated and as a musician being challenged
and
whatnot.
Yeah.
But from the layperson's perspective, it's nice to hear something that resonates right away with you. And, of course, this music, in my opinion, does.
I think it does, yeah.
Well, okay, so tell me, let's go back, Patrick.
Sure.
Where are you originally from?
I grew up in Central, in Baton Rouge. Went to Bellingrath Hills Elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Rode my bike there every day to fifth grade. And then went to Estruma Middle Magnet for middle school. Had a wonderful band program there with James Miller and Felix Dawson.
I love doing these interviews because you always learn something.
Sure.
James Miller, wonderful.
James Miller started me on trombone in sixth grade. I played violin fourth and fifth grade. And when I got to Estruma, they didn't have a strings program, but they had a band program. So I was like, well, I'll do something. My brother played saxophone, so I couldn't choose saxophone, of course, because we had to buy another instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Miller started me on trombone and played with Felix Dawson 7th and 8th grade, went to Disney World with that group and that kind of, you know, fun stuff. And then went to Central High School for high school, was drum major there. Senior year, had Terry Tullis, band director for 3 years, a wonderful trumpet player with Floyd Brown's band. And I remember him leaving football games after halftime to go to the gig. I'm like, we didn't think anything of it. And now I was directing, like, man, he got to leave early for show. Wow,
Moonlighting.
Fast-forwarding to when I was doing all the bands at Central, I was touring with Vivas, a wonderful Latin band out of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And we had Cafe Brazil almost every Friday night during football season. So I would wait for all the buses to leave, wait for all the kids to get picked up, and then drive from Central down to the French Quarter, down to Frenchman Street, and do Cafe Brazil. You know,
yeah, that was I remember that place.
The 20s.
Yeah,
the 20-year-old Patrick. That was a busy time, but it was fun.
So Terry passed it on, so to speak.
Yeah. So Terry was through junior year, and then had another one my senior year. Ed Winston did a great job. He eventually became the music supervisor for East Baton Rouge Parish. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated Northwestern, I was working at East St. John High School, and then got a call from Doc and said, hey, we want you to come by and do the Central thing. And I'm like, okay, Doc, you were the only one that could pull me out of New Orleans. Yeah, right. I was living in Uptown and teaching in Laplace and playing with Vivas and everything. So that got me back over to Central, where I've been director since 2001, August 2001.
So I didn't realize that Ed had brought you in. Yeah. Ed brought me in when I was going into teaching talented, gifted, and talented music. He was still the director there. And, good guy.
Good job, Ed. Yeah.
Well, so one of the things I enjoy about doing these is almost without fail with the musicians I interview, there's somebody at those formative years, whether it's middle school or high school, that really, really shapes that musician or gets them on the right path. So of the people you mentioned, is there somebody, like, was it James Miller or was it someone else that just, like, really kind of put that light bulb or turned it on, like, yeah, I want to do this?
Yeah, it would definitely be James, as in the, classroom setting and playing a brass instrument and leading a group and that kind of stuff. You know, James really, really had that down. You saw him. I didn't know I was seeing it at the time, but I was seeing it at the time, kind of. Remember, there was a trailer for the sixth grade band next to the big band room for seventh and eighth grade. And I was like, oh, man, wait till I get to that, to go to the band room instead of the trailer. But I always look forward to it because James made it so much fun. And so I definitely picked up that from wonderful Mr. James.
Now, we're talking a lot about trombone, but, like, when did you pick up guitar?
So trombone was sixth grade. Guitar was seventh grade.
Oh, okay.
We went to Ziegler's Music, and I remember my dad had a guitar in his closet that I never saw, never thought to bring it out, growing up. I remember, listening to AC/DC and Guns N' Roses, that kind of stuff, through elementary school, and like air guitaring, but never thought, hey, I should probably go take the guitar out. So in seventh grade, when I showed interest, like, hey, let's go get a guitar, dad immediately thought, hey, let's bring the guitar down to Ziegler's and we'll trade it in and get some guitar for you. Never opened the case, never saw it. So I still don't know what guitar it was. It was some, Gibson Super 400 from the 30s, something. He remembers getting on the bus, 13 or 14, and going to guitar lessons for a couple months, but never played a whole lot. He was a vocalist, great singer. He was an all-state choir through high school. And so we bring the guitar to Ziegler's, and we trade it in, and I get this, short-scale Memphis, $90 guitar. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we got it for free. I don't know what the trade-in value was for archtop from the 40s or 50s.
Right.
Probably fairly good, if I had to guess. Mm-hmm. So that was seventh grade. Kind of learned from records. And I remember on an eighth grade trip, I got to bring the guitar and we played it on the beach. So that was an immediate different musical avenue to say, like, oh, guitar is, outside of school and I can do cool things with it as well as trombone. So that was a cool realization in eighth, ninth grade and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know you, and when I hear you play music, and you are in so many different types of ensembles, so stylistically you cover so much ground, which is something that I've always really respected about you. Like, you're not just in one niche. Like, you do a lot of things musically, stylistically. Where does that, is that sort of open-minded interest in various genres always been there?
Yeah, so I think it inherently with the guitar, if your mind is open to lots of genres, you can find a place for guitar in lots of different situations. To go back to Vivas, I played trombone in the horn section for the first 5 or 6 years of the band. And one gig, Javier was like, "Man, you should bring your guitar. We're gonna do a little, you know, some little side things, and maybe, you know, blah blah blah." So I brought it for the first time. From then on, he was like, "Oh, you've got to bring it all the time now." So no double pay, but double instrument. Yeah,
they got so the money's worth. Yeah.
And as far as the gypsy jazz, when I was at Northwestern, wonderful guitar teacher and guitar player Luke Burriette was my guitar professor, and he was just getting into gypsy jazz as well. Mm-hmm. So we kind of both navigated the beginnings of gypsies together. And then as I went on, I kind of went back to it, found the instruments, because the Selmer Macaverity style of instruments are quite different. And when you have that in your hands, you immediately go to that kind of style. Mm-hmm. And when I have the Tom Andersons or the Gibson Les Pauls plugged in through the big system with delays and distortions and modulations and inner monitors, you know, that's a whole different thing as well with those groups. The archtop jazz guitars bring something different. So if you're open enough and you can find the instruments that speak to you, you can really have lots of things to say in different
right.
ways.
Right.
Yeah, it's just that kind of instrument, I guess.
Yeah.
If you take it
that way. That's true with piano too. Like,
sure.
Even just piano, like not talking about keyboards or anything mm-hmm. like that, but just how a certain instrument feels, how it resonates, can bring out different things.
Of course. Yeah,
you know, inspires you in different ways, or kind of kills the inspiration in different ways, depending on what the situation is.
Yeah. Yeah, and like with the archtop guitars, you know, when somebody says it's a jazz gig, you're like, is it really a jazz gig? Like, what are you... I know what you think you mean when you say jazz,
right?
And not to belittle anybody. It's just when they say it's jazz, and then they ask for this, you know, huge distorted, you know, iconic part. It's mm-hmm. like this is an acoustic gypsy
this
jazz
is what
thing.
You call
know,
jazz, right?
Like we could do a version of it, but I think the crowd would probably want. So, you know, being having versatility, and now with the digital modelers and things, you can be totally silent on stage and get all the tones that you need.
Right.
So it's a pretty good time to be a guitar player.
Hmm. Well, I know you work quite a bit, you know, as a guitarist, freelancing around. But
sure.
when did that start? Like, when was your first foray into like starting to do jobs, paid jobs?
So by tenth grade, I had formed a band. We played actually a Club M. If you remember Club M, it was behind the Salvation Army. On Airline, the corner of Greenville Springs and Airline, mm-hmm. And it was a teen club that had, you know, rock shows. So, again, the excitement of working up a set list and you know, getting that performance ready with that rig, as well as, you know, practicing for All Parish Honor Band on trombone and getting ready for symphonic band gigs all at the same time, and marching band shows all through high school. That juxtaposition of the different styles all at the same time really set me up for what I do mm-hmm. Now. And, you know, it's the preparation for it. You know, getting to do the work is the exciting part,
sure.
You know.
Right.
You get to get ready for those different kinds of things with the different instruments and the different set lists and the different groups. It really does keep it exciting.
Right.
I think a lot of people give up on music because they're like, "Oh, I can't find the time," and you know, it's just not rewarding. It's because they kind of pigeonholed into one thing, and the more they open it up, the more situations, and you never know what situation is going to get you into. You know, some exciting things can happen if you just kind of
sure.
open up to it and enjoy doing the work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoying the process.
Enjoy the process. Yeah, that's the idea.
Well, there's lots of other things I want to ask you about, but before we do that. I wanted to see if I could get you to play a solo piece.
Sure.
So what you got?
This one is entitled Nana. I wrote it for my daughter, who's Anna. But I hear in the gypsy realms, Nana is a term of endearment for lovely children. So here's Nana.
Okay. That's gorgeous. Beautiful.
But thanks. These, you know, and I don't think that would have come out on an acoustic guitar like a Martin or even a jazz archtop or a Les Paul. You know, it really took these type of instruments, you know, the Selmer McAverity style for that to come out. Mm-hmm. I think that's what
So how old was she when you wrote that?
This was probably 2010, so she was around three, okay. Two or three, kind of dancing around. And, you know, harmonically, it's kind of strange, if you were paying attention. B-flat, right?
I was checking out.
The viewers, of course, might pay attention. It goes from B-flat major to E major 7-9, you know? And that came from... it was that melody kind of popped out. And then right. When I was harmonizing it, like, how? Oh, that's kind of nice, you know? And you can think of it as, you know, B flat major to B major. But I never really play the B major. It's that, you know, flat five, which is normally.
Right.
But I kind of looked for that beauty and that flat five kind of thing that worked out. The intro was just, you know, it's about that dissonance always resolving to something that you didn't know was coming, mm-hmm. You know.
Right.
So, yeah. Again, these guitars, in all the tunes that I've written over the past 30 years, 35 years as a guitarist, I guess, a musician. Maybe 40. The gypsy jazz realm that's where I've become most comfortable at writing, and I'm lucky enough to have a group of wonderful musicians that I get to play with, which Mike is a part of.
It's always a pleasure when I get
when
to
I'm
do
lucky,
it.
Yeah. And to you know, the tune just kind of come together that way, and it's not necessarily normally in the gypsy jazz realm you're playing. Gypsy jazz standards in the way that they played them. So it's much more of a somewhat of a more classical look on it. You're doing their solos and their techniques and their renditions of the tunes.
Right.
In my originals, it's much more of the tone of the guitar using the right hand technique and the freedom of harmony that they use. That's kind of what inspired me to write those original things. Yeah. Hmm.
You know, I'm going to sort of shift lanes on you, mm-hmm. but not really, sure. Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, really what's evident is an expertise in this particular style, but just as a player, sure. Whether it's guitar or trombone. Mm-hmm. And you also have this other side of your career, which has been going on quite some time, of education.
Sure.
And I know as an educator myself, like I've always kind of admired or just respected and how do I put it? Just understood that when someone comes into a classroom like yourself that has, as I put it, real world experience, like, you know, gigging experience. And you bring that, you walk into that classroom, before you do anything, you're already offering so much to those students that, as opposed to, you know, someone in music education or arts education that might not have that real professional experience. They're primarily an educator. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's nice when you have that other dimension to bring to it. So you've been teaching for some time, and, you know, I've seen the students that you've produced, and they're very lucky. I don't know. I know many of them realize it, but
they enjoy it just like yours. You know, we're lucky when we find kids that enjoy the work, and you just give them opportunities to work at it. You know, and instilling the love that we have for whatever genre it is. You know, I think that's what they get immediately is our it's just, you know, our love for it, love for the work.
Well, so tell the listeners and viewers just your career as an educator. So when did you start teaching?
I got hired at East St. John High School before I graduated college, probably 5 or 6 days before graduation. I think I was the 30th band director in 10 years for that one. So, you know, struggling program. I went in December of 2000, and it was getting, you know, a couple weeks, got them ready for Christmas. And went back the next semester, and it was all Mardi Gras season. So we did 8 Mardi Gras parades in a week. We did Bacchus, Endymion, Orpheus, Thor, Prometheus. Earned lots of money for the band. They had brand new uniforms. I think they got new uniforms every couple years from the parade things. And, you know, I think a lot of directors went in saying, you know, hey, guys, you're doing this wrong. You got to do it this way. And as a new educator, I wanted to know, and as a player, I wanted to know what they got excited about, what they liked about band, what they, so I kind of, you know, I listened to them play, and when they fell apart, we kind of talked about why they fell apart, how do we fix that. So I kind of got on their page of, as musicians, not as, you know, a teacher that knows everything, a student that knows nothing. It's where's the love of the music at, and let's find that, and let's make that better. So had a great semester at East St. John, and then got a call in mid-May that Central High School was opening, and they wanted me to come be the director. So that was August 2001. I started as the band director at Central High School and did, you know, marching band, symphonic band, jazz ensemble. Central's lucky enough to have a jazz ensemble class for the last, I would say, 40 years. They've had a jazz band class during the day, which is very special. And the, you know, the kids have to take both. If they're in jazz band, they have to also be in symphonic band. I describe it as teaching French 4. You know, you got to go get your French 1 and 2 in that symphonic band class so we can talk French 3 and 4 in jazz ensemble. And they pick up new instruments. You know, if they're a flute player, you know, they can pick up piano or saxophone. My daughter is a clarinetist, and I made her play alto. For, you know, she had to pick a jazz instrument, you know. Not to say that the other instruments aren't a part of it. They can be. But I like, you know, as much as we can, have a traditional, you know, big band ensemble with those instruments and then accentuate with other stuff.
Well, it's great to teach the kids about, you know, doubling or
doubling, just, all that kind of stuff. Keep them up there. So, and in 2012, I got a second position at Central. So instead of being a head director, assistant director kind of thing, I kind of took it as we can split duties so we can focus on an aspect of the program instead of always focus on everything like most programs do. And then, not to say that that's wrong. It's just, you know, if you have a way to shake things up and try something new, that's, again, more invigorating than doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Sure.
So I got a second position. They were over marching band and symphonic band, and I got to take over just the jazz ensemble, music media production, where I started. We were actually renovating the theater that year, so I started the class in sound design, and they ran the theater for all the productions that were there, mm-hmm. and people that rented out the Central High School Theater, the kids got paid $30 an hour, $30 bucks an hour to run the room like a professional. Again, as soon as I could get them in a professional situation, a lot of questions were answered. You know, how are we going to use this? Why are we going to use this? How much can I make? What is it? It was, oh, wow. I get to do 1% of what I know for the money.
Right.
Like that's,
right.
you know. I also started a guitar program and a rock band class. And then fast forward to now where there's a LSU course in sound design that mm-hmm. I teach for a dual enrollment credit. And I use Pro Tools through that. I'm an AVID certified instructor for Pro Tools. So the kids actually earn a certificate as an AVID certified user in Pro Tools through the LSU class, and that earns them a CTE credit as well. So they get a dual enrollment credit and a CTE credit mm-hmm. All at the same time. So under performing arts, we're always struggling trying to find those accreditations in the performing arts, and that's definitely one of them. There's also one for Sibelius. Louisiana doesn't recognize it yet, but we're working on that to get some. Hopefully, in inside of band programs, the kids can be trained on Sibelius and Pro Tools to earn some certifications without having to take extra classes to, you know, make their experience better.
Gotcha.
That's the goal. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, education-wise, what are you excited about this coming year? Anything in particular? Or?
Oh yeah, always exciting things. The students in the class, which, you know, change every year because it's a year-long class. We do mm-hmm. Two college courses within the same year, Pro Tools 101 and Pro Tools 110, along with the LSU course material. And since that doesn't make them busy enough, we also do all the recording sessions for District 4. So when we started recording All-State Jazz maybe 10 years ago, we hosted those. All-state orchestra auditions, and now symphonic band records as well. So I host that at the school. So there's probably 7 or 8 recording sessions Saturdays that anywhere between 80 to 350 students come in, and my students are in the room running the recording sessions.
Wow.
They have to show the teachers how to work the computer programs because I don't want the kids in the room, but they have to show the 50 or 60 year old teacher how to work the newfangled thing, and
right.
so they immediately get to be the experts in that mm-hmm. room and in the hallway. They run the flash drives back and forth, and we can do between 200 and 300 recordings in 2.5 hours, something like that. So
wow.
they do well. So that's always an exciting thing. Get to, you know, meet the new students in the course, and this is all, you know, between September and early November. So within the first 3 weeks of the class, you know, they're having to do recording sessions that...
So they jump right in.
They jump right in.
Right.
And to understand that it doesn't matter if you mess up, it can't be done over again because the kid's gone. And this is their shot. So mistakes aren't an option. Messing up is going to happen. You just have to catch it
and
fix the problems, you know. And it's more of them showing the older teacher how to do it. So it really puts them in a position of power with great consequence, which I think is the mm-hmm. great combination that we can do for that age, you know.
Yeah.
Show that they are extremely important in every step. And they do great. You know, we've been doing it for years now.
And you've also been involved in the ranks of the Louisiana Jazz Educators Association. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the history with you of that?
Yeah, so LAJE kind of came out of we were part of a national IAJE, and we would take up dues and send, you know, 80% of it to a national company. We'd keep like $5 for the state and, you know, like, hey, we can buy some cheese and crackers for next year's meeting. And when that national one dissolved, we kind of figured we would start a state organization that would keep most of the money in the state so we could help other programs and help do outreach. Ronnie Mayard, Andy Pizzo, a lot of great jazz educators from around the state came together and really put it together for the furtherment of jazz education in mm-hmm. Louisiana.
Yeah,
we help out for the, it's a service organization. We help out the All-State Jazz Ensemble. If there's a teacher that wants to start a jazz program, but they've never played jazz before, which is, you know, most of them.
Right.
We go out and we find charts for them, do master classes, that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, it's been a great organization, helped out a lot of programs. Yeah, the more the merrier. So if you're an educator that are interested in jazz, look up LAJE on the internets and you'll find us. Doug Stone did a great job revamping the website. He's our LMEA jazz rep as well.
Yeah, and wonderful guy.
Michael Brothers, the mm-hmm. current president, just retired from Southeastern.
Right, I saw that.
Yeah. But still with LAJE, good job.
Yes.
Did a phenomenal job, and we started the LAJE's hosted a jazz festival at a couple places in the state. It was at Northwestern a couple years. And when Mike took it over at Southeastern, really found the backers that it's kind of special in Hammond. They really have a strong township around people that ask for help for the arts. Mm-hmm. And Mike had that just that great personality and that great love for jazz music that really they got to see and got excited about promoting and helping. So the State Jazz Festival is up to 4 days now at the Columbia Theater. Mm-hmm. They do a great job over there. And Jan Gerbrecht here in town was mm-hmm. a pivotal member. She kept us all straight with the money in the books. And
I know she did.
And things yeah, like that. Yeah. She keeps us all straight in many ways. And she hosts the Invitational that was named for Lee Fortier. And we tagged on her father, John Gerbrecht, maybe
a few years ago.
10 years ago?
Yeah, probably longer than that. Yeah.
He was still alive. You know, we didn't want to wait till people mm-hmm. weren't around anymore to show our gratification. So that's a show at Manship every March to get ready for Loyalist Festival. So really a vibrant area in jazz education, Baton Rouge is. They just, you know, we're
very
lucky.
God bless all of y'all, because I think that's such an important legacy, especially, Louisiana, South Louisiana.
You know,
I mean, it was born here.
Yeah, to all the people that did this 100 years ago.
Right.
To keep it going. And the kids deserve to see that other realm of excitement. And just like in middle school and high school, when I was doing the rock bands and the symphonic band and the jazz ensembles, they deserve to see all those different things and get to experience mm-hmm. that and to pull for those. And that's what makes them, better adults. I've got kids from the program that are now my son's principal, has been my son's band directors, my daughter's band directors, pivotal people in the community that mm-hmm. Came from all those different things, and they'll send me Spotify lists of like, Mr. Bordelon, huh? Look what I found. Like you're 35 now. You can call me Patrick. You know?
Nothing like former students to make you feel old.
I know, like dagnabbit, and they've got kids now the same age as mine.
Right.
Our job is to make productive members of society with a love for the arts, and it's been a great journey doing that. Yeah, trying to do it.
Well, the community is lucky to have you. And
look who's talking there, Mike. Yeah.
So you've always impressed me so much with your versatility and of course your passion for what you're doing, which means everything.
Sure.
So speaking of like you're playing, you play with a lot of ensembles. So, but what do you have coming up in the next?
Yeah, a couple
in the near
things.
Future.
I had a residency this July at Hayride Scandal with the wonderful
great place. Great
Chad
place.
Bro and Andy Bourgeois.
Wonderful musicians. Yeah.
Just, killer guys, killer place. You know, any place that has jazz on a regular basis for years deserves mm-hmm. All the accolades
Amen.
That they get.
Yeah.
I did Gino's a couple weeks ago. It's another one that is a pivotal jazz place here in Baton Rouge.
Long-standing music tradition.
Those are every Wednesday in July. I was lucky enough to get those. I play in a band called That 70s Band. Mm-hmm. It's a horn band that does all the cool stuff from the 70s.
Right.
Just had a couple little disco things. And we are actually at the Manship Theater next Thursday. That's July 24th, I believe, starting at 7:30.
Okay. Yeah.
Still got a few tickets left for that. It's a low ticket alert. But if you're interested, it's a great show and a great venue. I describe it as one of the best acoustical spaces in America.
Yeah.
You know, they did a wonderful job with the Manship. And strictly pros over there. It's just like playing at Tipitina's or House of Blues or Lincoln Center or any of the stuff.
Right.
It's world class. So
right, they know what they're doing.
That's That 70s Band of Louisiana, if you want to follow that on the face space.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. That's just the last couple of weeks. I'm doing a jazz duet with Luke Briette from Northwestern this Friday in Lafayette, you know, just guitar duo.
Mm-hmm.
And I just bought a 7-string arch top a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was a North Shore maker, Jimmy Foster,
mm-hmm.
who Don Vappy plays his instruments.
Sure.
Steve Mazakowski, you know, all the jazz guys had him. He died in 2011. But really got famous for making 7-string arch tops. So he did a model called the Basin Street that I found as a 6-string a couple years ago. And then a guitar broker in Houston or in Dallas, Tom Van Hoos, had a 7-string of the exact same model. So I brought my 6-string, we put them next to each other, and he had 15 John Monteleone arch tops. He probably had, $1.5 million of arch tops. Yeah, just wonderful, wonderful guitar lover. And I put them next to each other, and he's like, "Oh, I've never had the maker with the same model and two different strings like this." And I brought my Calton case, which is a very expensive case, from my other one, and it fit in the case. So
it was meant to be.
It was meant to be. So now I have two wonderful Jimmy Foster, and I've been playing that every Wednesday with the at the Hayride Scandal. You know, we do. Kind of half archtop traditional jazz, and then I'll bring out the Les Paul or the Tom Andersons and do some more interesting things. But again, just like the gypsy instruments, the 7-string is kind of opening up a different language and a different voice on the instrument I've played for so long, and it feels like it's brand new. So
that's exciting.
Yeah. It is exciting. Yeah. Only to want to do that work and learning that new instrument.
Right.
You know, it's great.
It's what keeps us young.
It's what keeps us young and excited. Yes. Yeah.
Well, Patrick, again, I want to thank you for being here and being part of this.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
And playing some music. And see if I can get you to play one more before we...
Sure.
See if we can play the listeners out. So what are we going to do?
This one is entitled Way Off Swing. I wrote this... I think this is probably the first Gypsy original that I wrote. It was on a mountainside in Tennessee. There was a water rushing in front of the cabin on a nice morning, and took out the gypsy guitar, and this is what came out. So I figured it entitled Way Off Swing, which is Wolf. So Wolf Swing, I guess. Is
I'm pull this up. So
the,
we can, there we go.
American version of it. Wolf Swing. Thank you.
The Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge would like to acknowledge our generous sponsors, the Shell Corporation, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Louisiana Office of Cultural Development, and the City of Baton Rouge.